Ever since there have been cars, they've been preyed upon by their natural predator, trains. The first recorded collision between a train and a car happened on October 30th, 1901, in Westbury, New York, on Long Island, to the noted French car racing pioneer Henri Fournier, who was in America to show off his Morse race car to William K. Vanderbilt, an early auto enthusiast who was also, ironically, a railroad tycoon. Like almost all accidents between trains and cars, it was the motorist's fault. Fournier was crossing Long Island Railroad tracks at what was reported to be a perfectly safe rate of speed, but he didn't stop. The crossing had no gates, no visual signals, just a ringing bell, and the car's noisy engine drowned out the sound of the bell. Fournier didn't see the train approaching until it was too late. The car was completely smashed, but miraculously, Fournier and all five passengers in the car survived without serious injury, even though one of them was launched headfirst against a barbed wire fence. In another great irony, that man was a publicist for the Long Island Railroad. But trains have been plowing through road traffic since long before the horseless carriage. Some sources claim the first known collision between a train and a road vehicle was in Bewdley, England on December 21st, 1830, when a Great Western Railway train collided with a horse-drawn wagon, but I don't know where this claim comes from because the Great Western Railway was founded in 1833 and Bewdley, England wasn't connected to a rail network until 1863. The first one that I could find that seems to have really happened comes from the British Railways Archive, which reports an April 26, 1833 collision on the Liverpool and Manchester Railway with an unspecified road vehicle. No other information whatsoever, but I believe this one because the Liverpool and Manchester, which opened in 1829, connecting the titular English cities, was the first modern railroad in almost every sense, and when you're not sure who the first railroad to do something was, it's usually the Liverpool and Manchester. But they weren't the first railroad to put up a real crossing signal, as in something to really warn people crossing the tracks when a train was coming, something other than just a sign. The first railroad crossing gate was patented in 1867 in Massachusetts, and those would have to be manually operated and weren't widely installed. The busiest railroad crossings were protected by a flagman, a guy who was paid to stand at a crossing and wave a flag warning people to stop when a train came along. And in between trains, he'd hang out in a hut called a crossing shanty. Some crossing shanties still exist in the US, even though crossings have long since been automated. You know how I did a video about how China still used steam trains until remarkably recently? Well, manned railroad crossings still exist in one country too, India. There are a few in rural parts of Indonesia as well, but India is the last country where they're the norm. And not only that, for a while it seemed like they had no plans to get rid of them. In fact, between 2019 and 2023, Indian railways replaced thousands of automated crossings with manned crossings, which I assumed was a program to give rural people job opportunities, but it seems more like they really consider manned crossings safer because replacing automated crossings was the first phase of Indian Railways' plan to eliminate traffic fatalities, and now their second phase is to replace manned crossings with overpasses and underpasses. Crossing signals didn't start getting interesting until cars made them necessary. The first widespread automated crossing signals in America were called wigwags, and they looked like this. The wigwag was invented in California in 1908 and first deployed all over the Pacific Electric, a vast commuter rail system that used to cover most of Southern California. They didn't have gates, and they were just meant to look like something that people on the roads were already familiar with, a flagman waving a lantern back and forth. Crossings began to add gates in the 1930s, and the Association of American Railroads, which is a trade organization of private railroad companies, not any kind of government body, decided on a set of rules standardizing what railroad crossing signals are supposed to look like not long afterward. To this day, though, most US states don't have laws requiring railroads to use this kind of crossing signal, or any signal at all. And if you want, you can get creative with the warning equipment you put along your tracks. In the late 1930s, William Alonzo Billups, a station master at the Granada, Mississippi station of the Illinois Central Railroad, became concerned with a number of accidents between trains and cars at a crossing near town. The busy Mississippi Highway 7 crossed the Illinois Central's main line between Chicago and New Orleans, where passenger trains like the famous City of New Orleans would often speed through at 90 miles an hour or faster. But Billups didn't get serious about protecting that crossing until, according to local folklore that I couldn't corroborate, an accident at the crossing claimed the life of a close family member of his. and the way he coped with his grief could not have been more Southern Gothic. This is the story of the Billups Neon Crossing Signal, the most over-the-top warning device ever built. I'm your host, Tor Parsons. This is my co-host, Jollibee the Durian, and welcome to Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. So, the Billups Neon Crossing Signal was built to be impossible to ignore. I've heard someone say it looked like the entrance to a concentration camp, and that's not wrong. Stop! Death! Stop! Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. It may have been the first railroad crossing in the world to have a horizontal gantry with lights and warnings on it spanning the road. Nowadays, that's pretty common for American crossings on a major street, if a little less gonzo. As the name suggests, the Billups Neon Crossing Signal was all wired up with neon tubing, and the words and the skull would flash red and blue. The real pièce de résistance, though, was not the visual warning, but the sound. Instead of bells, it had an air raid siren. After it went up in 1940, the people of Grenada, Mississippi nicknamed it the Skull and Crossbones, or the Lonzo after its creator Alonzo Billups, or the Screaming Crossing. It was not very popular. No video exists of the Billups Neon Crossing Signal. From descriptions of it, though, someone put together this animation of it in action. This animation has a couple mistakes. According to people who remember the crossing, the air raid siren didn't go up and down in pitch like that. It just ascended in pitch when it was spooling up and stayed at a steady whine. Air raid siren enthusiasts, who exist, of course they do, have managed to determine that the Billups had a Federal Signal Model A siren, which sounds like this. Also, the conventional flashing lights weren't supposed to normally flash. They only turned on when the rest of the system wasn't working. And the person making this animation completely didn't get the purpose of my favorite feature of the Billups. Like, it was mostly meant to scare motorists shitless, but it also had an actually useful, practical innovation that I've never seen before on a crossing signal in any country. An arrow pointing the direction of the train that was coming. In the animation, the two arrows light up simultaneously, but on the real Billups, only one arrow lit up at once. For a while, I wasn't sure which arrow indicated a train in which direction. Like, it sort of made equal amounts of sense to me if the arrow pointed in the direction the train was going, or the direction the train was coming from. Like, look that way, because that's where the train is. Since the signal was on a single track, there would never be two trains coming from both directions at once, so the arrows would never both light up. I found this photo, which is undated, but from the train in it and the dilapidation of the crossing signal, I'd say 60s, and as far as I know, this is the only color photo of the Billups Neon Crossing Signal, and the only photo of it activated. This proves that the arrow lit up in the direction the train was going. So, why weren't there more of these? Other than the obvious reasons, of course. Billups definitely tried to market his design across the country. When World War II broke out, though, it caused a shortage of neon, so the second most defining feature of the Billups after the siren, it made it pretty unattractive with would-be buyers. I mean, it's meant to be unattractive, but you get it. The original sign was stripped of its neon tubes by vandals a few times during the war. Makes me think about just how goddamn many little things are affected by major historical events, right? Imagine a world where you go back in time and kill Hitler before the beer hall putsch and there's no World War II. Then you go back to the present day, into a world that's probably unrecognizable in a lot more ways, but after you've gotten over the big things, you discover that all the railroad crossings are really fucking scary, and what you think of as an air raid siren, everyone else calls a railroad crossing siren. Also, despite all the absurd features, despite having seemingly pulled out all the stops to make it clear that this was a big deal, there is one stop that Billups bafflingly did not pull. Look at this thing. Do you notice something it doesn't have that most railroad crossings do? That's right. Gates. No gates. Nothing to physically stop a car from crossing. Except that that's not what crossing gates are for. Crossing gates have two purposes. If you stop, they're meant as a visual barrier that delineates how close you can get to the tracks. If you don't, they're meant to damage your car as your car smashes through them. They're made of fiberglass. They break off easily. That's for a couple reasons. If you get trapped on the tracks when the gates go down, you wouldn't be able to get off the tracks in time if you couldn't break through the gates. But also, I would bet that lawsuits are a hidden factor. If you're a speed demon riding dirty and you smash through some crossing gates, survive without getting hit by the train, but the gates put a big gash in the side of your supposedly invincible Cybertruck, you'll get laughed out of the courtroom if you try to sue the railroad company for damage to your car. You'll just not do that again. But if crossing gates really were strong enough to stop a speeding car, they'd kill you if you slammed into them at speed, and then you could sue and say, my loved one was just trying to get to the hospital for an emergency ingrown toenail surgery, and the train was coming really slowly, and if he'd just smashed through the crossing gates, he'd have still been with us today. There have been cases where people who disobeyed the crossing signals, or more often the next of kin of the people who disobeyed the crossing signals, have sued railroad companies, and they've usually lost. But if it was the crossing gates that killed you, I think that would be a grayer area. For all the ink spilled about the Billups, one thing I have not managed to determine is if it was effective. Did traffic deaths at this crossing go down after Billups put a big neon memento mori by it? History is silent. Maybe he should have added some gates. Or, since Billups was clearly the sort of guy who thinks outside the box, maybe he should have added some other kind of barrier. I have a clear memory long ago, when both YouTube and I were of single-digit age, of seeing a video on YouTube of an experimental train crossing in Michigan that had retractable pylons. Yeah, railroad crossing technology and I go way back. In addition to the crossing gates, a row of poles ascended out of the street to block the cars. I found an article about this. The experimental Michigan crossing was installed in 2007 and lasted until 2009, and I think I found the video I saw, but it was deleted. Does anyone have a video or photo of this? The crossing was apparently on Denton Road near Willow Run Airport between Ann Arbor and Detroit, and sure enough, on Google Street View, you can see where the poles used to rise out of the street, even in recent footage, but I can't find a single photo or video of it in action. Even there, the poles were described as, quote, flexible, so that you could drive over them without too much damage if they were trapping you on the tracks. They were mostly a psychological barrier, to stop people from trying to beat the train rather than stopping the people who actually do try. But Billups didn't need to stop at installing some wimpy retractable poles. In Russia, where they have bigger problems than vexatious lawsuits, there are crossings that absolutely are designed to stop a speeding car by any means necessary. They are great big steel plates rise up out of the street at some crossings, at an angle where it seems like you could drive over them, pushing them down if you get stuck on the tracks, but if you're approaching the crossing when they're already activated, you will get fucked up if you don't stop. Now that's how to protect your trains, provided they activate when they're supposed to, of course, which is not a given in Russia. Or, since those plates really might not be up to code in America, you know what I'm pretty sure would be up to code, but I've never heard of anyone using them at a railroad crossing? Tire shredding spikes. Like those spikes that they have at airport rental car lots to make sure nobody steals a car. Billups could have got his hands on some of those. That would work. You could have retractable tire shredding spikes, and the way those are designed, you can drive over them in one direction. That's why there are those signs that warn you not to back up. So you could have a crossing with retractable spikes that come out of the street angled away from the track. So if you drive toward it, you have your tires shredded, but if you're stuck on the tracks when they deploy, you can safely drive right over them. Or you'd have that same problem. If you do drive over the crossing at full speed, your tires get shredded, and then you're stuck on the tracks and you die. I think at that point, though, a judge would have a pretty good case to tell your surviving family members, "Buddy fucked around and found out." What did he think those spikes were gonna do? You could make a really good creepypasta, or like, not even a creepypasta, nothing against creepypastas as a legit form of literature, but like, a real Southern Gothic short story by Flannery O'Connor or someone like that about the Billups neon crossing signal. Imagine, in small town Mississippi, the station master's son, maybe? I actually doubt the story of Billups having a relative who died in an accident at the crossing. I think that's just local lore, since I've found obituaries for him that don't mention it. But either way, in this story, the station master has a son who dies in an accident at a dangerous railroad crossing. In response, he jerry-rigs the wildest crossing signal you've ever seen. But people keep dying at the crossing. Every time another accident happens, the station master adds another feature. Gates, an extra set of gates, spikes that come up from the road, barbed wire that lowers down to car level. It gets more and more forbidding. Maybe the air raid siren is added later on in this story, since for sheer excess, nothing can top the real life crossing's air raid siren. Then, maybe, eventually, one night he's out there replacing some finicky part on the crossing signal, there's a train coming, and the old station master thinks he sees the silhouette of his son in the light of the approaching train, so he runs toward the train. In the morning, someone finds his body. Everyone in town finds it hilariously ironic that the station master was killed by a train at his crossing, and they happily take down the eyesore crossing structure, leaving the crossing completely unguarded. That could totally be a Flannery O'Connor short story. In the real world, Billups seemed satisfied with his creation as it was. Other than replacing the neon tubing when it got stolen a few times, he never made any improvements to it, and it kept getting more and more dilapidated. The thing about having any piece of infrastructure that there's only one of in the world is that doing repairs is difficult and expensive. You don't have economies of scale, you don't have off-the-shelf parts. Where are you gonna get a red and blue flashing neon skull? Where are you gonna find people in a little town in Mississippi who know how to repair an air raid siren? Billups had to have someone on call to do that, because apparently the siren, which could be heard for miles, would regularly malfunction by not turning off when the train had already passed, and a special crew had to be called in almost every day in the crossing's later years to stop it. The signal outlived Billups, but not by much. William Alonzo Billups died in 1964 at only 61. Not sure of what. By that point, the signal was so undependable that regular crossing signals with the conventional X symbol, that's called a crossbuck, had to be installed alongside it. In 1970, the Billups neon crossing signal was finally removed. You can buy a model of it today from Lionel, with its adorable little air raid siren. Today, the road and railroad still cross there outside Granada, Mississippi, but neither are nearly as important as they used to be. Mississippi Highway 7, the major road that the Skull and Crossbones overlooked, still exists, but because of a reservoir that was built in its path near Granada in the 50s, the stretch of road that crosses the tracks there has now been renumbered Mississippi 332, and it's just any old two-lane rural road. And the railroad doesn't host 90-mile-an-hour passenger trains any longer. When the Illinois Central was bought by the Canadian National in the 1990s, it spun off that line in Mississippi, which became the short-haul Granada Railroad. Amtrak still uses the City of New Orleans name for a Chicago to New Orleans train, but it travels through Mississippi on a different route that doesn't go anywhere near Granada. There's no reason to have any major warning devices at this crossing anymore. I don't think this crossing has ever had any gates. You can still see the concrete stumps where the outrageous structure used to stand. And maybe, just maybe, On a hot, sticky summer night in Grenada, Mississippi, you can still hear the rumble of the city of New Orleans going by on the Illinois Central, followed by the ghostly wail of Alonzo Billups' masterpiece.